All right? So if you're taking notes, this is what the topic is going to be about, building new standards. And if you if you're in business, they actually have a standard that they use for stuff called Standard & Poor's. They report things about businesses. There are standards that the Food Administration have to use for our food, on how well our food, you know, what the standards are for the food for it to go in the marketplace. There are standards for school systems of how the classroom's supposed to be set up and what's supposed to happen in order for students to be able to be there. There's all kinds of standards that are happening today. There are different laws that are associated with them. So in your life, you got to think about your standards, what they are, so you know if they're ever being violated, whether you're violating them or somebody else's, all right? So we'll give everybody the opportunity to settle in here. And the standards we're going to deal with are the standards of your present, of today. We just, the first session, we dealt with our past, right? Did everybody figure out some things? Did the Holy Spirit bring some things to your mind that you're hanging on to? That's not the meat, it's something else. So, did we get everybody back here? Are we missing somebody? Nobody's in the bathroom, all right. We're still missing somebody. We're missing somebody. We're missing somebody else, but that's all right. All right. I see with eagle eyes. Okay. One of the standards that you should have in your life, I'm going to tell you and then we're going to go to scriptures, is don't disobey God, which is pretty self-explanatory, right? Or help anyone else disobey God. This is where we get in trouble. We are pretty clear in our life about what we think God wants us to do and what we shouldn't do. But then we don't realize that if we're not careful, we are aiding and abetting somebody else to disobey God. We are just as liable as if we did it ourselves. Let's go to the book of Genesis, and we're going to look at chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 12. Genesis 3:12. This is what it says. So they already committed sin. Adam and Eve already committed sin. And so God shows up, and the man said that the woman you gave to be with me, she gave me fruit from the tree and I ate. And the Lord said to the woman, what is this you have done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me and I ate. And the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed above all animals and above every living thing of the field. And da 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 da. And number 15, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. I will bruise and tread your head underfoot, and you will lie in wait and bruise his heel. To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your grief and your suffering and pregnancy and the pangs of childbearing with spasms of distress. Go on to verse 17. And to Adam he said, because you have listened and given heed to the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. The ground is under a curse because of you. In sorrow and toil shall you eat of its fruits, and of it all the days of your life. And he went on and on. Now, who started it? Eve did, because she listened to a conversation. Adam chimed in and supported. They all had consequences. All of them. The most beautiful animal, the most beautiful and cunning of all creatures was the serpent. It became the ugliest one, now eating dust. There's a consequence. Eve would have had slithering children come out of her. Now there's a whole bunch of pain. Okay? Adam would have had fruit grow back as soon as he picks one. No thorns, nothing. Fruitfulness, just perfection. Now he's got a sweat. He's got thorns coming up. And worst of all, they got kicked out of where they lived. And not all of them directly heard the deception. You see what I'm saying? Adam did not have the conversation with the serpent. Eve did. But Adam had a conversation with somebody who just disobeyed God. And he obeyed their instruction. When you start having conversations with people who are disobeying God, and you start taking their advice, you are now walking in disobedience. Does anybody see this? Let's talk about positions. Was Eve the wife of Adam? Yes. So this we're having, so let's take it another level. We'll have a husband and a wife relationship. Did God let her off the hook because her husband agreed to it? No. Did God let Adam off the hook because his wife agreed to it? No. Each of them got punished for their actions. Why? Because the consequence of that sin already existed. God told them they would die if they ever partook of the tree. Did he not? God couldn't possibly bring a consequence to something if he first didn't express this is wrong, this is disobedience. If you do this, if you go to Deuteronomy 28, you'll find all these blessings will come upon you if you heed my commandment. But if you do not, then all these curses will come upon you. That's what it says in Deuteronomy 28. If you have time anytime, sit down and read through that whole thing and make sure that there aren't curses on you. And you'll see directly which commandment it's related to that you're disobeying. Which law of the word. You see what I'm saying? So let's bring it down to your life. If you put your children, your job, your husband, your parents, your siblings before God, and you directly disobey an instruction of God for your life, by obeying their interpretation of it, there are consequences that will show up. So the thing you're trying to do the most is to appease them and keep your relationship with them going well is exactly the opposite what ends up happening. So if I sat with some women who are now married 20, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and I'd say to them, so how's your husband's spiritual life? And how about your children? How are they doing? Well, I'm the only one that's saved. They still haven't been saved. And if I go back and trace their life and see how many times they try to appease their husband and their family and disobey their relationship with God and see who always won, and it still did not yield the results. See, the lie is this. Here's the lie, women. You gotta find the lie and expose it. The lie is this, that we are supposed to submit to our husbands no matter what. That's a lie. That's not the whole truth. Here's the whole truth. We are to submit to our husbands as Christ and the church relationship is. That's the whole passage in the Bible about the husband and the wife. It relates to Christ and the church. Here's something that Jesus said every time he was on earth and he'd talk about his relationship with God, he'd always say, I never do anything I don't see my Father do. Wouldn't you agree? I do nothing I don't see my Father do. So if we have things that are being asked of us that my father wouldn't ask me to do, I don't have to obey. That's a tough thing to say in a Christian church, isn't it? But here's the proof. If that were the case, Eve would have never had a consequence for her action. Her disobedience would have been covered by Adam's disobedience. You know, like, or let's say he said, it's the woman you gave me that caused this. If that were the case, then his disobedience would have been covered up because she did it first. But you see how each person was accountable to God. If you look further in Genesis, we have Cain and Abel, right? Cain and Abel, the problem was with the heart. Cain was older, Abel was younger. God did not care about that order when it came to a relationship with him. See, this is where we get all mixed up. We get things out of order when it comes to our relationship with God. Nobody else should be in the place of your relationship with God. Your relationship with God should always be a one-on-one thing. And I think this is where wives get confused. Like, what do I do? You know, my husband doesn't want me to come to church. He doesn't want me to participate. I can't hold a position in the church because my husband needs my time. Well, what are you sent on earth to do? You see what I'm saying? What is your call? What is God's call in your life? If your husband is hindering the call, then take it up with God. Sick God on him. You don't try to appease it. When you try to appease it, you are siding with this. You are disobeying God. It's not you're trying to have a peaceful house. How many of you could say, and you don't have to show your hands, do if you want to, but you've tried this tactic where you try to appease your husband your whole life. You walk in on eggshells your whole life. Oh, I don't want to do this because my husband's going to think. And then there's no spiritual growth in his life. As a matter of fact, he's getting worse. Because you keep feeding and watering disobedience in your house. That's what it comes down to. So I want you to be free to actually obey God. Don't be concerned that you're going to break up your marriage, your kids are going to get out of whack. They already are. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how long is the tactic you've been using going to work? It hasn't worked yet. So why not take the step of faith and actually do what God tells you to do? And you don't have to be some bold woman to do it. You just need to be God's woman. The boldness to do this sort of stuff comes from the Holy Ghost. If you put God first and you show the example, you cannot be double-minded. Go to go to James chapter 1. I'm going to show you something. We talk about it a lot, but I want you to read it. I mean, before Doug and I became pastors, you know, we had experiences with traveling around the country, and we'd meet all kinds of people. We'd stay in people's homes and stuff. And there's always a theme with women. They're afraid of their husbands. Like, everything they do, their husband has to give them permission. And I'm thinking, there's like something wrong here. When did God die and make them God? Like, when Jesus died, when did he make him God? And because we nurture our, because we speak that way to our husbands and enforce that in our homes, there's pressure put on our husbands for positions that God never intended for them to have. See, the husband is the head of the home. He's not my boss. You understand what I'm saying? Here's what happens to the head of the home. When he allows Satan to come in, like Adam allowed Satan to take over in his garden, he has to sweat to make it what it was. That's what happened to Adam, isn't it? The ground got cursed, thorns came up, and the Lord said to Adam, now from the sweat of your brow, you are going to have to do all this work. But what do we find in houses? The women are doing all the work. Isn't that what it is? Like, well, I can't do this because I got to make dinner for my husband and I got to do the laundry. And I mean, really? Somehow it turned into that. God did not send women on earth just to be laundry doers and cooks. Some women, if that's what you're called to, you're not called to just do it for your husbands. You're probably called to help somebody else too. It's one thing to do it. And I'm not telling you to negate your responsibility, because if you read Proverbs 31, the Proverbs 31 woman, her house is well taken care of, but it doesn't say she does all the work either. She has maids that she gives orders to. I'm expecting that day to show up in my life. You understand what I'm saying? But until we get there, what do we do? Like, do we live 70 years of our lives just like slaving for somebody? No. So we have to make the change. Okay? We have to make the change. So let's look at James chapter 1. I told you to stay awake. I'm scaring you now. James chapter 1. Okay. Verse 5. All right. If any of you is deficient in wisdom, let him ask of the giving God, who gives to everyone liberally and ungrudgingly, without reproaching or fault finding, and it will be given him. Okay? Only, verse 6, it must be in faith that he asks with no wavering. That means no hesitating or no doubting. For the one who wavers is like the billowing surge out at sea that is blown hither and thither and tossed by the wind. Verse 7, for truly, this is the truth now, let not such a person imagine, don't even think about it, that he will receive anything he asks for from the Lord. For being as he is a man of two minds, hesitating, dubious, irresolute. He is unstable and unreliable and uncertain about everything. Listen to this, about everything that he thinks, he feels, or he decides. Now think about this, ladies. We're talking about being able to receive anything we ask of God for. This is what we're talking about. And the Bible's telling us that a double-minded man is an unstable person. And don't let them even imagine, like don't even dream about it, that they'll ever receive anything from God. Now here's the thing. If you have a mind to do one thing, but you live your life based on what you think your family wants you to do, guess what kind of mind that is? Double-minded. You see what I'm saying? It's a double-minded man. If all your decisions are based on fear of what somebody will think if you stepped out and did it, you are operating in double-mindedness. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to have your own way and carry on and like I'm my own woman and you can't tell me what to do. That's not being godly either. Because I can guarantee you that if we followed God's instruction, the end result, remember John 3:16 still operates. For God so loved the world that he sent his only son. It's for whosoever will. God will orchestrate everything he can so every whosoever will. But we get in God's way. We think we're doing God a favor. We are so desperate for people to get saved in our lives that we try to do all kinds of maneuvers. And they keep getting worse and worse and worse because we're operating with two minds. And none of them are the mind of Christ. None. We have access to the mind of Christ, but this is not how the mind of Christ operates. With the double-mindedness. You see what I'm saying? So this whole part we're going to talk about now is to set up a standard and live with it. All right? So the first standard is obedience to God only. Obey God. And I'm telling you, when you obey God, He will start to line things up. Of course, people are going to start getting all out of bent out of shape because they're not used to you doing that. This is brand new now. Wait a minute, you're not going to bow down to my every need? Huh? Could you imagine living your whole life and you're just serving one man? Or four children, or three kids, or one child, you know what I'm saying? Two grandkids. When you look back and take a record of your whole life, that's all you have to account for. How many days you obeyed your husband? Or how many times you stayed home with your children? You see what I'm saying, ladies? I'm not knocking any of that. It is our responsibility. We had kids, it's our responsibility. But here's the thing, the Lord said you should train up a child in the way they should go. So when they grow old, they won't depart from it. You can't make anybody do anything. You can make you do something. Paul said, I die daily to my flesh. And he said, I bring my body under subjection. I can't make Pastor Doug do a thing. I have no desire to make him do anything. Because if I have to make him do something, I don't want a man that I got to make do nothing. I want him to be convicted in his own heart to do it. I'm not raising a child. He's not my child. Gabriel's my child. I would train Gabriel differently. I'm not here to train my husband. I'm here to help my husband. And I'm here to help him obey God. So anything that he does that I'm aware of, now sometimes you might be hooking up with something that you don't realize is not God, okay? There's where God's mercy comes in. You understand what I'm saying? God looks at the heart. But if you know that what they're asking you to agree with is out of God's will, I am sorry. There is no way I'm agreeing with it. You couldn't put a gun to my head and make me do it. Because that's my standard. Do I not love my husband? No, I am not. I love my husband. That's why I can do that. You see what I'm saying? Because remember I told you, ladies, wherever I told you, when you have agreement on something, it's like adding yeast to the dough. It causes it to multiply that much greater. So if you would not agree with disobedience, watch how quickly it will evaporate out of your house. You have to decide. Like, what has the agreement brought anyway? Like, think about it. Like, has it brought the results you've been praying for 50 years? I mean, has anybody here seen a result from disobeying God and agreeing with their husband or their children? Has anybody here seen the result they expected? I mean, honestly. Because I could be totally off on this. Nobody. I really wish I could sit some young wives down with some of you ladies who've been married for a while. And you guys have a conversation of what you've done to bring your husbands in the kingdom. And tell them the feedback of 10 years later. 15 years later, if what they're trying to do today, if it worked for you 20 years, you understand what I'm saying? What would you tell them differently? You would tell them, run, don't do it because it didn't work. You see what I'm saying? Now, don't think you're a big fat failure because remember, we're moving forward here. But you got to have a new standard, right? So you got to make sure what you've been doing in the past, you got to know what's wrong so you don't do it today. And that's what we're talking about. All right? Now, I had some notes I woke up with this morning in my head about Eve. See, Eve's home, here's some points for you so you can think. You have to start thinking like a winner. You have to start thinking like an owner, all right? Things aren't happening to you. You're making things happen by the words you speak and by the atmosphere you allow around you. Eve actually allowed an animal, the serpent, okay, was an animal. She allowed an animal to analyze her house. Do you ever thought of that? Because he said, well, God surely didn't say that about that tree. Wasn't that tree in her garden that God put her in? So she was having conversations with somebody that never had authority to speak in her garden. See, God gave them dominion over the animals, didn't he? He blessed them and he told them to subdue them. He gave them dominion. But she gave this animal an upper position, questioning God, who is higher than all of them, to her. So watch out for those who analyze your home that are not analyzing it in light of God's commands to you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Say, does God really need you to do that? Do you really need to have godly relationships? Do you have to go to church and have fellowship? Do you have to work in the church? Like, do you have to work in God's kingdom? You understand? What would happen to you? You're not going to die. You're still going to go to heaven. You're not going to go to hell if you don't do those things. You see? But Eve allowed the conversation to occur, right? She agreed with the devil to disobey God. She didn't just do an action. She gave agreement. Sometimes when we do things, we're agreeing with the enemy. Not sometimes. When we do it, we're agreeing with the enemy. We're saying, you're right. Yeah. That's when compromise comes in. You start justifying things. You see? All right. Let's talk about Joshua and Caleb for a minute. You know, I was thinking about this. Joshua and Caleb, here they went. They were two of the spies, all right? There were 12 spies that went into the land to spy it out. When Moses said 12 spies, they were in the wilderness, and he said, go check out the land, see what's there and all that. And so Joshua and Caleb comes back. They're like, man, we could take this land now. There's like, it's flowing with milk. Everything God said it is, and all, they're all excited. And then you got 10 of the guys going, oh, my God, we're grasshoppers. Oh, it's awful. Well, what had happened? All of them had to spend 40 years. All, every one of them. Joshua and Caleb included. They all spent 40 years, including Moses. Now, Moses had a choice, you know. Moses could have intervened and said, hold it. We never think about this perspective. Moses was the leader. Didn't God choose Moses? And God chose Moses not to take them to the wilderness, to take them to the land flowing with milk and honey. That's where God chose Moses to take them, is it not? Moses failed, didn't he? He did, because God showed it to him. He took him up to the mountain and said, there's where it's going to be, but you're not going. Because you what? You disobeyed my instruction. Think about this. Moses. Do you realize when he was going to take the children out, the children of Israel out of Egypt, he had to send his wife and his two children with her father to stay with them? Do you realize he had to send his family away to do this task he was about to do, because he couldn't have them with him because it was so humongous what he was doing? Do you see the sacrifices the man made? Do you remember how these guys were all against him and the earth swallowed them up in front of his presence? Do you remember how his own sister stirred up stuff against him, and what he watched her turn with leprosy? Look at all the things God did for him. But you know what ticked God off? When he disobeyed God. There's never a reason why we could ever be justified. We cannot do enough good to justify disobeying God's instruction to us. So here's Joshua and Caleb, and I'm thinking, Lord, why did they have to spend? I mean, couldn't you like set them up, like let them head on over there a while, and these people rot for 40 years? And you know, he said, well, look what happened to them. Joshua became the leader the whole time. So now for 40 years, God was going to have to replace Moses. So for that 40 years, Joshua would stay in the presence of God. Whenever God and Moses would have a conversation, Joshua would hang out in the presence, in the glory. You see what I'm saying? God chose Joshua, and he announced that Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, get up. And he gave him instruction. He said, don't look to the right. Don't look to the left. You are well able to take the land. And he kept telling him, be courageous. Be courageous. And did Joshua lead the people in? Yes, he did. What happened to Caleb? Caleb could stand. He went up to the mountain and told the giants, get off my land. Could you imagine how ticked off he was at the giants, first of all? Because the report that caused him to stay there for 40 years was, we are like grasshoppers in their eyes. There are giants in the land. So he went right after the giants. He's like, you know what? You cost me 40 years eating manna. Get off my land. And he said, I'm as strong now as I was then. God preserved his strength. God preserved his strength as it was the day he obeyed. You see what I'm saying? And he got the reward of the high spot in town. And he didn't have to fight. He just spoke. He said, get off my land. And he took it. Okay? So here we have Joshua and Caleb who were stuck with a bunch of losers. And with a leader who refused to just say, let's go do it. But they kept a good attitude and they got a great reward. See, Joshua and Caleb were not found among the ones who accused Moses of not being a good leader. There's no record that they ever were. They had every right to. I don't know why Pastor Moses just won't let us all go and take the land. I have faith. I'm a woman of faith. I know we could take it. He's obviously not in faith because he's agreeing with the 10 spies. And the Lord had said it's an evil report. Do you see what I'm saying? There is something called protocol. So the reason I brought up this story is in your life, one of your standards should be to follow proper protocol. So if you're in a situation where you are not in charge, you ain't the boss, okay? And you have faith for something to happen, you know that your faith is in agreement with what God said would happen, but the leader has chosen to not let it happen because they listened to somebody who didn't have faith, okay? It's not your position to override them and say, come on, let's get us an army, Caleb and Joshua, we're gonna go fight. You're gonna lose. You're gonna lose because you're going against protocol. You understand? But God works it all out. You don't have to do God's, here's the bottom line of today. You don't have to do God's job. He really could do it. He's been doing it for thousands of years. He's been doing it a long, long time. We never have to defend God. We just have to prove, we just have to live it. Just live the thing. Let him do the defending. He can, you know, he watches over the earth to and fro to do his word, to fulfill it. His word never returns void. Okay? And there's one thing the Lord showed me when we were at lunch with the kitchen team. Do you realize the 40 years that the children of Israel were in disobedience and they were living in the wilderness? God provided for them, did he not? Even their clothes didn't wear out. But somebody else was eating their grapes. They were eating manna. Do you realize? Their enemy was eating all their harvest. The land didn't stop producing because they didn't occupy it. When the spies went to check out the land, remember the Bible says that two men had to carry one thing of grapes. It was so big. That tells me it was harvest time. Grapes don't grow if it's not harvest time, right? So when God sent them to spy the land out, to show them that they could take it, it was at the time of harvest. Think about this. That means they were going into a place where somebody already planted, did all the hard work. They were going to walk into a place where they just go pick the stuff and eat it. There were houses there already built that they wouldn't have to build. But they chose, because of fear and intimidation and a small thinking, they got stuck in the wilderness for 40 years with generations of people dying while somebody else enjoyed their grapes. When I got a clue of that, I went, you know what? There's enough time for somebody to be eating my grapes. I need to be eating my own grapes. I don't want anybody else eating my grapes. You know what I'm saying? I said, we've been in this region long enough. There are a lot of things that should be happening here that ain't happening yet. I mean, somebody's eating my grapes. And it's time they get it out of their mouths. It's my grapes. You understand what I'm saying? All right. Now, number three, make it part of your standard that you would heed wise counsel. Okay? Heed wise counsel. Let's go to Exodus chapter 18 and verse 13. I want to show you something. Exodus 18, 13. The chapter 18 is talking about Jethro, who was Moses' father-in-law, okay? And he had heard all that God had done for Moses. Now remember, Jethro was keeping Moses' wife and children this whole time, right? So now they're in the wilderness. They've already gone through the Red Sea, done all that. And so Jethro's coming to visit. And in verse 13, it says, the next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, what is this that you do for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. This is Exodus 18, 16. Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing that you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and this people with you, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to perform it all by yourself. Listen now to me. I will counsel you. See that word there? I will counsel you, and God will be with you. You shall represent the people before God, bringing their cases and causes to him, teaching them the decrees and law. So here he's telling Moses, start teaching them. Don't just be giving them fish every day. Teach them how to fish, okay? Showing them the way they must walk and the work they must do. Moreover, verse 21, you shall choose able men from all the people. So he tells them what to do and what the qualifications are, okay? God-fearing men of truth who hate unjust gain. So I want you to choose men that don't take a bribe. That's pretty much what he's saying, okay? And place them over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens to be their rulers. And let them judge the people. At all times, every great matter they shall bring to you. But every small matter they shall judge, so it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. Now, ladies, this is a man named Moses who just brought out 3 million people out of slavery by just listening to God with a big stick. That was it. Here comes Jethro, his father-in-law, who's telling him he's doing something wrong. And if he doesn't stop it, he's going to wear himself out. Who's this sheep herder to tell me, Moses, who's brought all these people out, what to do? He didn't take that attitude, did he? He listened. See, if we're not careful, we want to do everything ourselves. And we get all wore out. And the reason we want to do everything ourselves, because nobody else could do it like us. Listen to me. At the end of your life, does it really matter if the towels were folded perfectly? Honest to God. Could we at least put things in perspective with it? When you go before the Father, is he going to say, how dare you have your family have to use uneven folded towels? Heck, you didn't even take the stuff out of the dryer. How dare you? No. Let's put life in perspective. Unless you got somebody on hand that does it perfectly, so be it. But until then, leverage your time appropriately. Don't take the excuses you've already set up. Well, I can't do this because I gotta clean my house. I gotta wash my hair. I gotta walk the dog. Honestly, I've heard every excuse in the book. Oh my God, I gotta spend time with my husband. Oh, poor hubby, poor thing. He's just gonna die. Why isn't he here with you? Do you understand what I'm saying? Put yourself in light of eternity. Put yourself as if God were asking you these questions. What are you going to say to him? You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry, God, I had to take a nap. This is my bedtime and that's it. I'm not moving from that time. Just think about these excuses we have, and they're so built in and so automatic, we never give them a second thought. It's how we lived our whole life. My life is so sporadic, I love it. That's just who I am, all right? Pastor Doug is also spontaneous, but he's more of a steady, methodical person, but he still lives spontaneously. In other words, if we had something planned and God's telling us to go do something else because somebody needs us now, okay, and we're doing God's work, right? So God says, I chose you to go help them. Guess what we do? Yeah, we go help them. Who else did that in the Bible? Jesus. How many dinner parties did he get to spend the whole time there doing dinner? Honestly, I mean, think about it. Most of the time he got interrupted to go pray for somebody who's dying. Did you hear him go, well, excuse me, but I believe in finishing what I start. Do you understand what I'm saying? You see how sometimes we can make ourselves, we can put ourselves in bondage that has no eternal value. It has no value in eternity. But we're on earth trying to perfect life. Why? Our life on earth is to just be lived out. You don't have to try to perfect it. Daily we strive for perfection. We don't have to like get stuck here trying to strive for perfection. It's an everyday thing, okay? So you didn't do it right today, guess what? Tomorrow is there. Right? We've got to get women, I think women more than anybody else, because we do this little flow thing, you know? All the projects are still in the head. I never completed that thing from 1925. You know what I'm saying? And you're dragging a whole suitcase worth of projects. Forget it. Start looking at these projects. Is that going to glorify the kingdom? Is that my new life? Is that going to help me now? No. Give it to somebody who finds pleasure in it. Just give it away. Get it out of your way. Get it out of your way. I spent all this money on it. Are you gaining any money from it now? No. Okay, there's your answer. Free yourself up to do what God called you to do. You understand what I'm saying? If you got a party with the girlfriends versus somebody's going to give you all, if Jesus showed up and said, if we said at Victory Christian Fellowship, Jesus himself is going to be preaching to help you with life, how many of you would give up the party with girlfriends? Yeah. Well, you know what? He set things up. He put people in offices, and that's what happens when they come and preach. So if I were you, I would rearrange my whole life around where God is training me. If you're serious about your future with God's kingdom, you understand what I'm saying? If you feel like you've arrived, well, then there's no way I can help you. You probably might need to teach me a couple things. But until then, see, you're never going to be able to teach the people God sent you to teach until you yourself position yourself to be teachable. What are you going to tell the people when you get there? How much you disobeyed? How much you didn't even go to classes? How much you never volunteered to help? The Christian life's not about putting your time in. It's about developing your future with God. Just keep growing. It's not about my spirituality. You know, I go to church on a Sunday, and then I give to this charity. What is life about? Like, what happened? You see what I'm saying? We have people in our lives that we've known, you know, from the time we got married. They're married today, and, you know, different friends. And you talk to them. They have the same problem they had as the first day they got married. Like, what happened? They're exposed to more ministries than you are, than you and I are. I mean, they actually come in personal contact with these people. Why is there no change? You know why? Because there's selfishness. There is the, I gotta fix me. I gotta appease me. I hurt. Nobody wants to help. Well, it's time that we get out of that and position ourselves of how we can get out of where we are now enough to help people. You see what I'm saying? So part of that comes from heeding wise counsel. You get wise counsel from the Word of God. The thing is, you might not understand everything in here. Well, that's what God set up. He's got Christian television. He's got Christian books. He's got your church. He's got your pastor. He's got fellowshipping with believers. Do you know how key that is? The Bible actually says, do not forsake. I mean, don't think lightly of fellowshipping with other Christians. Especially as the end is drawing closer. Don't you think God would know that in the end we're going to have cell phones, you know, texting, Facebook, Christian television, you know, internet church? Don't you think he knows that there are things that would be set up where we can be so comfortable still learning stuff and never having to be among people? Yeah. But he specifically said, do not forsake the assembling of yourself together, especially as the days draw near. Do you know in underground China, like the churches in underground China, they risk their lives to go to church? I mean, do you realize if they got caught, they could die? I mean, these people are risking their lives to go to church, and we could go wherever, you know, and... Do you see the perspective here? Like, what does God have to do to us? Well, he won't do anything he's already done. Amen? So I'm not preaching at you. I'm just giving you information. All right? The other standard that you want to set, which we touched in the first session, is only take from your past what helps your future. Okay? Now, this does not mean divorce your husband and ditch your kids, okay? That does not, yeah, thanks for clarifying. All the men in church tomorrow will be going, what did you teach the women? I've been served, okay? Unless there's grounds for biblical divorce, then that's between you and God and you figure that out. But let me tell you something. I'm talking about you, all right? Your personal thinking about yourself. Remember, we're throwing away the yucky wrapper? We're taking the meat, okay? You know, do you know when Esther went into the king? She didn't come in going, oh, king, couldn't you just speak to me? I'm a lonely orphan girl. She didn't bring the orphan girl in with her. She brought the beautiful, lovely virgin with the gift, whatever Haggai told her to take to the king. That's what she took in with her, and she won the heart of a king. So even when we go before God, we don't need to be telling him, oh God, you know, I grew up without a proper mother and father. He'll say, my son did that too. His mama forgot he was there for 3 days. They left him in some room with a bunch of lawyers for 3 days. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Forget it. Just take what is relevant to your future, all right? If you can't build your future on it, drop it. It's rotted wood. Just drop it. It can't build a foundation. All right? Yes. Yes.
When I was ministering to the person, we gave our testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. Don't take it. Okay. So don't take, you have to know what to take into your future. If when you take it into your future, it's all about I'm the victim, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, forget it. If it's that I won and here's my victory rag, that's different. So you need to discern what to take into your future. Yes. But again, remember what we said. Don't be telling people that if God didn't do that to me, I would never be the person I am today. If the testimony is what the devil meant for evil, God turned to good. Because you know what's dangerous about that? You know, I watch these, you know, you see these athletes and superstars, whatever, whatever, that used to be strung on drugs. They're like living a prostitution life and they're carrying on. So they go to talk to high school kids and like, oh, I cleaned up. Well, you know what I'm thinking? Why aren't the kids thinking, well, honey, look, he turned out, why don't I just go have some fun and then I'll become a big celebrity too? You realize that's a testimony that's going on? Why has that not helped our kids? That didn't help anybody. All those ads they run with alcohol, you know, don't drink and drive. You know why they're doing that? Because they did. And they're serving community time on TV. You know what I'm saying? All these kids are seeing these singers and these musicians who had a lifestyle of drugs, but they have all the money and the bling. Well, what would you think as a kid? Well, wait a minute, they got away with it. Look how successful they are. My parents, they've been playing by the book all their life, and look, they have nothing. So we need, when we're doing these kinds of testimonies, it has to be annotated with the phrase, what the devil meant for evil, God turned to good. And they need to understand that all the evil that occurred, the pain that it inflicted on your life, that's unnecessary, that doesn't have to happen. But when it's painted as some big glorious event that God made happen, or I wouldn't be here today, that makes me want to like go out and do some drugs and prostitute. Heck, God will cleanse me. Do you know what I'm saying? So we have to be careful with that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was a good question. Do you guys want a break? Okay, let's take a little 5-minute break. And then we'll continue.